closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul.
And I'm Simon Coronel, coming to you live from our apartments in quarantine.
We're still in quarantine, everything's fine. Everybody's alive, doing okay. Try not to go insane. How are you, Simon? This is just a check-in. We had a special guest that got pushed to next week, and hopefully we'll be able to do that and get some more fun special guests. But I figured we haven't had just like a one-on-one in a while.
Yeah, we haven't good old-fashioned, like, second era Two Magicians. Because the first era was just you interviewing lots of people. Then second era was just us being existential and navel-gazing.
And lazy, because I just didn't feel like calling people.
So to check in back to, honestly, I mean, I feel weird saying it. Like, I'm still fine. I was born for this. Introverts rise up. Like, yeah, it's not great. I'm sad for the world. I'm worried about where this is all going. But personally, I've always had this bad habit of saying yes to too many things and biting off more than I can chew and then not having enough downtime to recuperate and being perpetually exhausted. And now that option has been removed from me forcibly, don't get me wrong, I would prefer to be having a bit more quality human interaction, but this is in some ways better than the alternative for me. And I've got a lot of stuff I need to get done. And so this is really forcing me to just focus on that and nothing else.
Yeah, it is a weird, like, as an introvert, you get the news and you're like, oh, this is actually secretly great. I can't really say that though. And then realizing, I mean, I was listening, Taylor Hughes just had Justin Willman on his podcast, and it's a great episode if you haven't listened to it. And he asked Justin, you know, do you miss performing? And it was so comforting for me to hear him say, no, I really don't.
Yeah.
And that's how I've been feeling literally up until today, where it's like, okay, I do miss getting up on stage and, you know, having that connection with the audience. But I don't feel ashamed to say it now that I've heard a few performers say it. It has been a month of non-performance bliss, because I've kind of secretly, that is the curse of, I'm realizing, when you start accomplishing your goals and all these things, like you can see behind me, just a wall of things that accomplishments to kind of remind myself. I've taken photos and I've printed them out and I put them on the wall, just things I'm very proud I've done. And
by the way, clarification for listeners, I can see that because we're doing this on video, not because I'm in Nick's apartment breaking quarantine.
That's actually a really good point, because we'll get hate mail.
Incongruity of, wait, we're live from our apartments, but I can see Nick's wall?
There's always somebody who wants to shame, just like jump at you and shame in this world, this day and age. But yeah, it's I getting just back to that ridiculous point of, I haven't been craving performing. So this is the first couple of days where that's kind of creeped in and go, okay, yeah, that's something. I remember why I got into this. So it's been a good reminder.
Well, it's hard to imagine from the outside that, you know, you chase your dreams and you find the thing you're passionate about and you try and make it your career. And so that's the best thing. But then one of the side effects of that is you now do it so much in so many very non-optimal situations that you actually kind of hate it a lot.
Yeah,
because it's not actually what you love doing. What you love doing is doing certain kinds of shows and certain kinds of performances in certain kinds of environments. But if you're doing it professionally, you usually have to give up the selectiveness, and you have to do it in lots of ways that actually just sort of bastardize it and twist it and turn it into something you love, into something you kind of hate. And so it is nice to be, obviously, it's, you miss the good bits, but there are a lot of really frustrating, annoying bits of just doing it as a job that it is kind of nice to have a break from for a little bit.
It's weird how my life has kind of switched in that, you know, because we are full-time magicians, but there's a lot of hobbyists who we talk to or friends of ours who do it part-time, who are just, you know, so excited to be full-time one day. And I just always tell them, no, you got the best of both worlds. You have a solid income and you get to take gigs that you want. But it's funny, I've been doing this live show with Taylor Hughes every Wednesday at 7 o'clock on YouTube, or nickpaul.net/shed. It's live from World Shed Quarters, and it's just us getting to live our dreams of, like, being basically Conan O'Brien, having our own talk show and writing monologue jokes and writing sketches. And I realized it this Wednesday when all of the tech, all, like literally 8 hours of work I put into the show all morning, and then we went and did it live. Just everything fell apart, and it was just a reminder of, oh, I spent the whole day working on something that I'm not getting paid for, or will probably never translate into anything. We wrote a few magic bits that'll work in real life, which is good. But it was the first time the paradigms have shifted. I have become the hobbyist.
Yeah.
The late night talk show world.
Yeah, but you still, I mean, even if you're right, what kind of viewing figures are you getting on it, roughly?
We have an average of 50, 60 people watching for an hour, which isn't a lot of people, but the fact that people are sitting there and watching between two different platforms is, there's something, it's weird, it's getting, there's something about doing something live. You know, people aren't going back and rewatching this, but the fact that this is happening now, and literally at the last episode, I tasered myself because it, like, this just happened. It was, the comments were egging us on. If he tasers it, I'm going to give you money, because we have like a virtual tip jar. And oh, we made more money in donations that show because I tasered myself. And I felt terrible about it. And we both, Taylor and I, like, what? Why did we do this? And we're like, texts are just flooding in after going, that was the funniest, hardest I've ever laughed. Thank you so much. So we've kind of been doing this weird therapy for 30 to 50 people every Wednesday. And it's off the walls and it's ridiculous, but you just have to remember, okay, we're just trying to keep some sort of sanity and have fun.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of, that makes me think of a couple of things. One is this idea that there is this sort of difference between reaching lots of people versus reaching people on a very intense, deep level. And sometimes a smaller reach, you know, say you can profoundly affect the life of one person. That's a really significant achievement in the world. And that's a really beautiful, important thing. And then, so it's sort of on a sort of, I don't know, humanitarian way, if you're actually having a really good connection with a small group, that's still really worthwhile. And then sort of on the theoretical commercial way, there's that whole, do you know about the 1,000 true fans concept?
No.
But, I can't remember whose idea this is. It's someone else's concept. But the idea that if you want to have a, not if you want to be a millionaire or whatever, but if you want to have a functional career as a creative creator of anything, as an artist, performer, writer, whatever, you don't actually need millions of fans, because most of those fans won't really buy much. They won't result in much revenue. But if you can find ballpark 1,000 quote-unquote true fans, and a true fan, that whoever it was described it as, someone who will basically buy anything you put out, who's not, who really likes your stuff, e.g., I'm a true fan of Neal Stephenson. Anything that man writes, I'll buy it. It's not always good, but the hit rate's good enough. No, I'm buying his book.
Sure.
And if you have, and if you just sort of run the numbers, say you produce, you know, one or two things that are purchasable for about $20 a year, you know, et cetera, and sort of run the numbers. Again, those are not the right numbers, but you know what I mean. That you don't actually need a massive, wide, shallow fan base. You can get by really well with a smaller, still not tiny, but smaller, deep fan base.
Yeah.
And so on that sort of, you know, what's it worth to be a human being in this world, connecting with people and affecting people in positive ways, that's a great thing. But then on the flip side, commercially, career-wise, that can still work, potentially. I am not an expert in this. Do not take this as advice. I hope this is right.
Monetization expert tips from Simon Corey.
Someone who's not monetizing very effectively right now.
But, I mean, there is something, that is the weird world we live in, where you can, you know, we have subgroup within a subgroup of fans for things. And, I mean, that's what this podcast is. We get messages weekly from our, you know, small group of fans who really enjoy it. And kind of, I think it's what keeps us doing this going, oh, people, like the people that listen really enjoy it. And that's better than, to me, than 200,000 people kind of half listening.
Yeah.
Maybe financially that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. You get a dollar from each of those 200,000.
Yeah.
But the problem is the things you often can't. There are all those case studies of, say, you know, I forget again who it was. There was an Instagram, quote unquote influencer, a person with a massive following of like tens of millions, I think, on Instagram, who eventually launched her own fashion line. So, like, okay, I'm going to launch this series of T-shirts, and massive launch all over her Instagram channel, millions of people this broadcast to, and she sold four T-shirts.
Yeah.
Four. And yeah, just because you have a big fan base doesn't mean that's a fan base that's going to get you anything you want or care about in life. And again, it's not like you're just using it. It's not like that's the only purpose, but it shows it's a very shallow connection as opposed to an actual deep and significant connection.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, we've been making all these like short sketches and funny videos for this live show. And I put out one where I did the balloon out, Taylor thought it would be funny. Hey, what if you did the balloon outside as like a new face mask? That would be, you know, so magician comes up with new way if you don't have a face mask. So shot this 30-second video. And I had within a couple hours, two different viral marketing companies reach out and want to get the rights to it. And, you know, we're going to sell it all over and you're going to make money. And I'm like, okay, this is probably sketch. And then I reach out to Taylor. I go, what do you think of this? He goes, honestly, we have nothing to lose. We are making no money right now. So what's the difference? And, you know, I think we made like $15. One weird news place bought it. But it was a funny reminder of stuff can go viral and often does, but leads to nothing else. So you kind of have to take the Zen approach of, I don't expect anything from any of this. You're just doing it to do good work, which is like kind of goes back to doing magic shows. The second I changed my frame of reference to, I'm just trying to write a show that I would want to see without really caring about what happens. Suddenly people pay attention and are interested.
Yeah, massively. Well, so I mean, it gets back to Zen and Stoicism, right? Realizing you have relatively little control of the outcomes in your life. Not none, but a lot of it's out of your control. And so you try the best things you can, you tip the odds as far as you can in your favor, but fundamentally it will also always be up to RNG, randomness. That was the video gaming RPG version of randomness, random number generator.
Yeah, it's true. I'm such an idiot. This morning, our friend Jeff Civilico is a brilliant juggler and perform with him formally on ships and stuff. But he also has a charity that he works with and co-created called Win-Win. And they do a lot of stuff with children's hospitals. And he asked me yesterday, hey, could you fill in for this children's hospital? And I go, oh, totally. Yeah, I meant to sign up. Sorry, I forgot. I've been busy editing. And he goes, no worries, Matt. It's tomorrow at 11 a.m. I know it's a little bit early for you. I go, 11 a.m.? That's no problem. It's fine. I get a text from him at 8:45 this morning. Hey, man, I don't know where you were, but don't worry, I covered you. It's fine. I go, oh, you meant Eastern time. So I abandoned some children in the hospital, and I feel terrible. I'm going to redo it on Tuesday. I re-signed up. Luckily, they have a bunch more, and I felt so terrible and apologetic. But, man, like, out of all the things I'm not doing right now, and I still managed to mess that up. So bad.
It's funny how that strikes me as one of the many, many, many little silver linings that are coming out of all this sadness for the world. And there are lots of things that are obviously still bad, but we're going to come back to a world where people are much more flexible and adaptable about distance working, distance learning, distance communicating. I think everyone is learning things like that, which is always specify time zones when specifying times as just a universal habit. And that's a habit that I've been in for a lot of my life, again, having friends and family in Australia and the UK and living in the US. So I'm always thinking about time zones. Most people have never really had to. That's fine. Mm. Whereas now a lot more people are going to come out of this world thinking about, oh yeah, I've got to think about other people's time zones. And it's going to hurt the world for a long time, but there will be a lot of very significant benefits as a civilization, I think, from this.
Yeah, there's the Zen thing that we always talk about on here is it literally is teaching everybody to be Buddhist in a weird way. Like you have to live in the moment because the information is changing. Yeah. Like we don't know, you know, I'm so sick of talking about this, but we literally don't know what the entertainment industry is going to be even after all these things are lifted.
No
clue. No, so it's, you can either sit and be super worried about it, which does creep in, you know, for portions of the day, or you can just go, you know, it is what it is, and you have to just accept the information at the time.
And keep adapting rapidly on the fly.
There is also another thing, too, of going to the grocery store with a mask on, angry people with a mask on, and it being out of the thing that you would always normally get, and just having to be flexible. It's weird how, you know, for us, we have our set list of things we'll get, and then now it's not there anymore. And now you either can choose to be angry about that, or you can go, all right, that's just, it's such a micro thing. But in modern society, we're used to everything always being there. Yeah. And now that is not the case anymore.
It doesn't hurt to experience some hardship. Gives you a sense of perspective.
Yeah.
Life could be a lot worse, and is and has been for most people who have ever lived in the world, who have lived in times of war and plague and famine and just shit. And the Western first world has had it so easy for so long in so many ways. Suddenly, This is just a little taste of actual hardship, and it's going to make people a lot stronger and more flexible, hopefully, most of the time.
And it is hard for, and financially it's going to be hard and is hard for a lot of people. So I'm not negating that, but
some dark times,
you know, us included, we don't know what's going to happen in a few months. But the best tweet I've seen on this was Patton Oswalt. You know, it's like, what was it? I don't know how I'm getting the numbers wrong, but Anne Frank was locked up in an attic for 2 years. You've been in quarantine for 6 weeks with Netflix. Calm down. And, you know, people are protesting.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's so great. Yep.
Brilliant.
100%. Which reminds me, I have on a more sort of immediate podcast note, I have a message sent by a listener.
Yes.
Which
can
is
we,
my
can we possibly, read it in real time?
Yep. This is possibly my favorite message we've ever had.
You've sent me some really good ones in the past. Like, they have been pick-me-ups, no joke. So thank you for sending them in.
Good content. And this is just my favorite thing anyone's ever texted me about the podcast. And this was after, in response to the David Wayne episode. and this listener says, top 10 list of plot twists we were not expecting in 2020. Number one. Simon claiming to have no idea who the guest is, only to find out he was instrumental in helping the guest become comfortable with their magic skills and abilities. Number two, Carol Baskins allegedly feeding her husband to tigers.
Yep. The great tie-in. Yeah, that is my favorite thing. Hey, David, so welcome. So what's your deal? And like, I'm just on the other end going, this is my comedy icon. I can't believe we're talking to him. He has influenced most of my comedy.
Yeah, it was fascinating when you sort of sent me some background on it. You know, I'm not going to come into this completely cold like a yutz, but just all the things he'd done, I had never really made it across the Pacific Ocean, or had just not happened to coincidentally pass me by. And that happened. It's sort of one of those interesting reminders that no matter how famous or influential you are, not everyone will know of your work.
Yeah, that's what I like about him so much is he's not a household name, but if you mention a few projects of his, even one, even things that are more mainstream, like Role Models, which was a very, you know, big budget movie, people go, oh yeah, I know that. I know those people. And then you realize that there are people like David Wayne in the entertainment industry who are instrumental in, you know, creating the things that we love. And you only see the people on screen. You forget the writers and the directors, and, you know, he's on screen quite a bit too, but, it is something more so to aspire to, as opposed to just being the guy in front the whole time who needs, you know, all the attention.
Yeah. And it was funny because, again, as soon as once he actually mentioned the conversation, I did then remember that interaction. I just hadn't connected that this was the same person. To me, that was just some guy I met at the castle that was auditioning one night. I had no idea this was the same guy.
Well, I'm that way too, where it's like, I always remember this, and this has happened so many times. My dean of my college in the theater department was a man by the name of Sheldon Patinkin. And he was instrumental in, you know, creating great name, instrumental in creating Second City and Chicago theater, and just like a legend. I didn't know who he was like my first week at Columbia. And he just walks by, I'm looking at the audition list, and he's like, you want the rest of this? And he's holding a Snickers, like 75-year-old dude. Go, okay, thanks, man. And then
that's a pre-corona interaction, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's funny how much of that exists now. And you go, oh, thank you. I don't really think he took a bite out of it. I think he was just like didn't want his Snickers. And I go, oh, thanks, buddy. And then a week later, I have an audition for him, and I know who he is, and I just botch the audition because I'm so in my head. Oh my God, this legend is here, and I am auditioning for. It was a great lesson in. It's almost better to not know. I mean, that's why that interview was so good, is because I was so in my head about not wanting to sound like a fanboy, and you're like, so what's your deal?
Yeah, what do you do? You write comedy? Cool. That sounds fun. You seem like a cool guy.
Name some of your things. Yeah.
That's a thing that I've encountered a lot, having spent most of my life outside of the entertainment industry and outside of the US. So on kind of two levels, I'm on average much, I frequently encounter people who are at least partially famous. So I'm like, I don't know, never heard of it. Like, okay, what's your deal? And it's often very liberating, I think, probably mutually. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's a rule I made for myself we're in a weird position, right? Where we're not famous, but we're known. There, you know, if I go to a magic convention, people know who I am and have seen my stuff. And it's
what's that like?
Awkward. What?
What's that like?
It's
I almost put out a status update yesterday going, you know, it's 7 weeks into quarantine and nobody's asked me to be on their podcast. as a reference to like, nobody knows who the hell I am. And I'm totally fine with that. But it's very funny really to me. Funny. But no, yeah, you're absolutely right. People know. And that's the reason we're able to get some of these guests like Teller and David Wayne. People do know your shit because you work hard on your magic and you take it very seriously.
Yeah. And completely randomly got lucky a couple of times with visibility. And,
sure.
You know, yeah. But I made a rule for myself. The first time way back, I had an even slight non-zero amount, like 0.001 units of celebrity. I was at a magic convention and a couple of people had seen me at a competition and went, oh my God, that was cool. I made myself a rule right then to never, ever, ever for a split second assume anyone knows or should care about who I am and what I do. No matter, even if, you know, I one day become like a B-lister. Ah, mm-hmm. The dream, being a B-list celebrity. really not, because often fan interactions are kind of awkward. Often they're really nice. Plenty of people are cool, but it's still weird. There's this weird asymmetry. They know a lot about you. You know nothing about them. It's, I don't know, it's fine. It's nice to be recognized and appreciated, but I never really know how to navigate that interaction. I'm like, cool, thanks.
It's a strange thing, yeah.
You like sports? I don't know.
One of the oddly positive things about Corona is like I do enjoy doing the Penn and Teller thing after shows of meeting people and, you know, if anybody wants to come up and say hello or chat, I think
make the people happy, as you always say. Yeah, I mean,
I watched Justin do it for, you know, the meet and greet would be 3 hours. Like most of the audience from the theater would wait in line, and just the fact that they want to say hi is enough.
Yeah.
But it is the devil's advocate in me. The other part of me is like, well, with coronavirus, you know, I don't have to shake people's hands anymore. Which is like the most dickish thought in the world. But it was a genuine thought I had today.
That's amazing. It was actually, reminds me, speaking of Teller and the meet and greet, he totally owned me particularly, and you to a lesser degree. That's happened a few times on this podcast where we get really like, it's so annoying, people making these dumb magic jokes. And he's like, no, it's beautiful. It's a wonderful thing. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Being a sourpuss. God damn it. It's good to have those little wake-up calls.
Yeah, he had a very good response to that. And and we talked about that we talked a little bit about that on the Matt Marcy episode of how, you know, him having a real job has influenced that. I think for us, well, you had a real job for a while, but it is easy to, I mean, now that everything's gone, we are re-examining that outlook on it for sure.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I mean, it's also where you are. I was, again, extroverts. It occurs to me that extroverts have always been the straight white dudes of the emotional spectrum. You know, the world is crafted for them and they've never realized it until now. They're just like, it's just great. Whereas now for the first time they're suffering. I'm not taking any schadenfreude in that. And I'm like, that's rough. But it's also like, this is what it's been like for introverts normally in the world all the time. It's difficult, tough every day just to exist in the world. Yeah. And now the tables for the first time ever in living memory, I think, have turned. And which I think overall is good in terms of empathy and compassion, right? We're all getting better ways of understanding each other, hopefully.
And I hope it lasts. I mean, there are a lot of silver linings in this. Once again, financially, it blows. It is very strange to even qualify for unemployment because that's never been a thing. And it's never been something I've ever wanted to pursue. I've always kind of been like politically, if I can work, I'm definitely going to work. But at the same time, friends who do qualify, who are a lot of magician friends, aren't getting it yet. So it's they shouldn't be getting screwed at this point, and they are. So it's a weird thing. I'm literally doing these terrible, really low pressure drug deals where they give you a debit card from one bank and I'm not part of this bank. So I go to there, take out lots of cash, and then walk a block over to my other bank and dispose of it. And it's just surreal. You know, the first time it's like, oh, good, we got some money coming in. And then we did it last week and I go, I'm very lucky to be getting this because a lot of people aren't yet, haven't got the stimulus check yet, but just some sort of financial padding has been very helpful, but it is incredibly depressing to be going from one bank to the other and just holding this cash that I didn't earn. I didn't do a show for this. This is the government giving me money. And that is a weird thing.
Yeah, I mean, you paid taxes. That's literally what you did. Like, that's the point. You contribute to a system that eventually then supports people who need support when they
I was talking about that with my dad too. He's always, I mean, he's kind of instilled hardworking mentality in me. He's been self-employed and always, you know, never had to go in self unemployment. And we were talking about it last week going, yeah, it sucks, but we've paid into this and we've worked yeah. really hard and this is the situation. So until it runs out, we're going to go as long as we can yeah. and still trying to figure out what the next aspect of work is.
Yeah. And that's a thing I think a lot of people are struggling with is there is a time to be strong and a time to be weak and there is a time to thrive. And I wish it didn't rhyme because then it sounds planned, but like a time to just survive and just hold on. And for a lot of people, this is that. And that's okay. Like too many people get this sort of wound up in this self-idea, I've got to be this strong, independent person. Like, you can't always be. That's not how being a person mm-hmm. works. You'll have these flows and it's okay. It's, yes, you also want to move beyond it, but it's all right. There are times to be just weak and just hang in there.
Yeah, it's like okay. The places that give us money are no longer able to give us money. So like yeah. our whole support system is gone.
Yeah, so what are you going to do?
Yeah, so the alternative is to get a regular job, which may have to happen in a month or two when an unemployment runs out.
Yeah.
And I am mentally preparing for that, and I have the shame in that is going away because it's a That's weird good. Thing to be headlining any. Your own show and cruising all over the world, and now I have to, you know, work at Starbucks or at the grocery store.
Yeah.
That's a big mental adjustment.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of ego that you have to get out of the way.
In many ways, I think the two ultimate human skills are learning and adapting. Adaptability and the ability to learn and change and pivot is always, I think, the most important thing in every situation. But I have a topic on the actual core topic of the podcast, magic in the time of Corona. A lot of people internally of magic have been talking about this. But it's been an interesting thing of watching magic adapting to this new environment where we sure. can't interact physically and touch. But a lot of people come up with really interesting approaches to how to still give people the experience of magic, of wonder and astonishment, which has value, as we know, over live video. And I've been kind of personally really enjoying a lot of tricks and techniques and things over the years that were basically had the drawback of not being sort of examinable in a live environment. And so I always discarded them. And now I've been pulling out the junk drawers and going, wait a minute, this is great over video because you don't have the possibility of someone being grabby or whatever. No, it's not like there aren't ways around that in live performance, but things that just, the balance was tipped towards, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do something more reliable.
Sure. Yeah.
All this stuff I haven't done for years. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This is now great as a little quick thing over video.
Yeah. There's a lot of, we were talking about this with some friends of ours. There's a lot of magicians out there who are really kind of poo-pooing this and saying, no, you shouldn't be doing shows. And to me, it's like, no, you should be using this as an opportunity to be creative when you want to be creative. Don't yeah. put that pressure on you. But still, it's like, I've created three new routines. So that was
all
cool.
All mediums of performance are constrained intrinsically. Like when you're dealing, like even the fact that on a stage, you usually use a microphone. That means your performance is being filtered through a piece of technology to the audience. Like, and that's a trivial example, but it's true. At all points, there are constraints. If, you know, if the theater seats 100 people, you are constrained by that limit of 100 people can watch the show. If the sight lines are a certain angle, you're constrained by that. Now we're constrained by this very different, very extreme constraint, but performance and interaction and delight and joy and amazement can happen. It just depends on what you do with it.
Yeah.
And you know, it's sort of like all the people poo-pooing things. It's not even worth commenting on. Like, who cares? They don't have a say. They're not worth listening to.
Well, it's the, you know, it goes back to the, you know, the phrase at the when this country started was, you know, am I timing this right? I think it is when, you know, during the, you know, when we actually became a country, the phrase was join or die. And I kind of keep thinking of that. Where it's like adapt or die. And
yeah, completely.
Or just don't do magic for a year, you know, realistically a year until. Yeah.
But it's the idea of there sort of being quote unquote rules about what you can and can't do. It's like, A, can you do a thing that B, makes people feel something good and is a net positive to the world, and C, like ideally might actually make you money somehow. Yeah. Those are the rules. That's it. That's all that matters. Whatever the medium or the situation is, you know, without, while being ethical and not breaking any laws or screwing people over. And all of like Zoom Magic trivially fits into mm-hmm. those categories. Like, I don't know, what are we doing? We're doing stuff and then we die one day. Let's here are the constraints. What can we do with that to make people feel good and hopefully make the world better and or try and carve out a career that we don't hate?
We have a mutual friend. We have a little bit of a magic meetup every Sunday. And he goes, you know, I'm not a very creative person. I'm not a very self-motivated person, but this is what I know how to do. So I'm doing it. And so he's doing a lot of Zoom magicos online, corporates, birthdays, teaching. And then I call him out and go, you just said, and doing very well, you know, from the sound of it.
Yeah, that's love. The anonymous listeners.
You had a pro tip today. Do you want to throw in that pro tip?
I got a pro tip.
Pro tips.
This is a very coronavirus specific. It's not really a pro tip. It's more like a life pro tip. A lot of people are connecting with their friends over virtual gaming. Jackbox games, the Jackbox party packs, which I was into before they were popular.
I know. That's how I feel. Is like, well, we came up the first week of quarantine, we started doing, now everybody's doing, but it's like, it was inevitable.
And also, you know what you get for being into something before everyone else was? Nothing. It's worthless. Like, it's not worth bragging about. So what? Who gives a shit? Yeah, your taste is good, whatever. I freaking love Jackbox games. I've loved them for years. It's just one of my favorite things to do with a room full of fun, intelligent people I like and want to hang out with. And a lot more people are discovering them, and that's awesome. And my just pro tip on how to do them, because it took a few runs to kind of figure out how to actually make it work over Zoom, which is most people's communication platform of choice, is if you're the one with the Jackbox packs or the game packs, open up Zoom, open up the Jackbox thing, run it in windowed mode, not full screen mode, because otherwise it's hard to alt-tab between them and the screen share will lose focus if it's not full screen. I mean, if it is full screen. So run Jackbox in windowed mode, not full screen mode, then screen share to it from Zoom. And then this is the other detail that took ages. On Jackbox, drop the volume to just one sliver above minimum. You want the volume so much lower than you'd think, because most of the games, if you've played them once before or can narrate what's going on, you don't need to hear the instructions. It's way more important to be able to hear each other and the fun interactions that happen around the game, which is really the whole point of the games, why they're fun, is the interactions that they anchor for everybody else. Mm-hmm. So it's a very simple tip. There's a good chance you'd figure it out yourself, but it took us a while to like really get that system down and discover all those pitfalls.
Yeah. My pro tip is just kind of building on what you came up with to how to do these podcasts. I did an online show on Saturday and I adapted my nice fancy headset mic and just had it going in via USB input. And I have a mixer too, going into Zoom, so I could move around freely. Everybody could hear me fine, and I sounded much better. So I'm really into, if you're doing this stuff online, I think it should be as good a quality as possible. You know, our Shed Show kind of teeters that line, but we are trying to make it look pro, even if stuff falls apart. Like, you know, our show Wednesday, we had a massive echo for no random reason, but it became part of the show. But the reason I think if you are doing these online shows, you shouldn't be, it should sound good and you shouldn't be doing it through like the computer's speaker, and you should have some nice headphones or, you know, so the way you can hear people. But yeah, just, you know, take a little bit of extra time. And I know stuff sold out, it's very hard to get tech things, but just kind of look around and see what you have and do what you can to make sure that the experience is as pro as you can make it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like any medium. Think about it's, can, how are people seeing you? How are they hearing you? What's your lighting? What's your sound? That was something I started doing straight away with online video, is actually thinking about lighting, like lighting the situation properly.
Sure.
Making sure you're, you know, having, look at basic 3-point lighting, thinking about the audio. Yeah, the fact that right now we're recording this, I'm on my Stage Lab mic pack that I use in actual shows because it's a good quality mic, running into that you had to yell at me to get a USB microphone adapter to the computer. And it's good. Slowly building on the quality, figuring out, it's a brave new world. Let's see what we can do with it.
I mean, it's clearly like, I just got a computer monitor because I've been doing so much video editing. By the way, go watch episode one of Other Side with Zabricky on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Shameless pitch. It's very funny. Episode one is out. I'm editing an episode right now with Billy the Mime. It's very funny.
I'll add that to the massive pile of David Wayne stuff in my inbox.
These are 8-minute episodes. It doesn't take very long, but it takes forever to edit. You'll see why, because there is so much effects and overlays and comedy bits. Weird. It's Pee Wee's Playhouse on drugs. Even more so on drugs. But it's very funny. But it took forever just to get a big computer monitor because people are buying stuff. So I get it if you don't have it or don't have the capability to get stuff. But I do, it is it's funny, like guys will buy, you know, six different, you know, Audio Ape devices as backups and like three iPads, but don't have a decent USB microphone or don't have a decent camera for these type of situations. So it's,
and to be fair, that's because most people have never needed it before now.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is like, you clearly aren't going to have it, but take that mentality and just kind of be prepared. Just make it look as nice as you can, I guess.
Yeah. Do everything you can with as much quality and production value as you can.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how you can just take stuff you already have. Like I'm
basically
using,
have some standards, damn it.
I know, that's the thing. Just
have some standards. Take pride in your work, for God's sake.
That's really what it comes down to.
Been good. Catch up. It feels like the old days.
It is. Yeah. We're hoping to have some more guests come on. I've reached out to a few celebrity friends that we've made through the castle, and I'm just hoping that we are starting to see now. Taylor sent me this. I won't name the celebrity because I don't I don't want out it, but Taylor sent me this really funny email. He reached out to a celebrity and just said, hey, I know you're being bombarded. I know there's a lack of podcasts right now and a lack of interviews, but if you happen to want to be on the show, I'd love it. And it was just like a three sentence response of, yes, there are a lack of podcasts. No, I will not be doing it. Good luck in the fight, or something like that. It was just kind of like a slightly dickish response. And I'll tell you off mic who that was, because it fits even better, but I don't want Taylor to get in trouble. Fair. But he sent me that and it was very funny.
It's not slander if it's true.
Yeah. literally we have proof. But yeah, it's funny. And we're starting to see that too, where I think we were very lucky we got Teller, because we both had this idea
initial kind of gold rush.
Yeah, he's going to be bombarded too. And, you know, the guest we were supposed to have on this week is being bombarded. So hopefully we'll be able to get said person on in the future.
Well, you know, if you're a listener listening to this, let either Nick or myself on Twitter or whatever platform know, what would you like more of? Do you want more of us just talking about crap? Are there specific people you'd like to hear from? Are there types of people you'd like to hear from? More magicians, more magic adjacent people in other fields? Let us know. And if we can do it, we might.
Yeah. I think that's about it. I am fried and my air conditioner is off in my house because it's sound qualities, but it is now 95 degrees in California, which it's snowing in my hometown of Detroit.
Oh, wow.
Zero sense.
Yeah, it got warm the last couple of days.
Yeah. So I'm starting to die in my office. So,
all right. We're talking about the weather. That means everything's failed.
I know, let's wrap it up. That's what I'm saying is like, that's where my brain's going right now. And that's a cue to end the episode.
Cool. Well, it's been a pleasure. Until next time.
All right. I'll see you, buddy.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemic.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at twomagiciansonemic. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.